This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I'm going to introduce our next speaker, Vivian Wan, who's going to speak from Navigation to Transformation, Addressing Inequalities in California's Regional Center System through Community-Led Solutions. We all know that there are disparities in how much money the state spends on regional center clients based on their race or on the language that they speak. And the next speaker has analyzed how that happens and has concrete ideas about how to make it better and has written that into a report. It's with great pleasure that I introduce Vivian Wan, who is a senior policy attorney at Disability Rights California, and she's going to speak for the rest of the authors on the paper. Welcome.
I am just so grateful to be here with all of you today, and especially grateful to the committee at UCSF that invited Disability Rights California to talk about this brief. They were kind enough to see this report that we put out about a year ago in January of 2023. So what we'll be doing today is talking a little bit about some of the points that we discussed in that brief from a year ago. And then in the latter half of this session, we will start to talk about some of the ways we've been building on our work from last year and really kind of extending it and ways that we're starting to pivot and new things that are on the horizon that we think will be really promising in this space. But first, let's talk about some of the things that we brought forward in our brief from last year. Just as a point of brief background, in our system for about well over 10 years now, after a lot of advocacy and concern from many advocates, individuals, families from across the system, the legislature started requiring regional centers to annually publish data on their websites with regards to their service expenditures. Essentially, this is data that tells us how much that regional center is spending on the people that they serve. And you can find this data on the website for every regional center, all 21 of them. This data is updated annually, and it is broken down in many different ways. In particular, it's disaggregated by race and ethnicity and some other categories. And unfortunately, every year since this data has started to be published, it has shown some significant and persistent disparities across all 21 regional centers. And you can see here in this graphic that there are some, I think, major differences. This is from the last year of data that was available prior to the start of the pandemic. And you can see, for instance, that on average, regional centers tend to spend roughly about half of the amount that they spend on white individuals that they serve. And that number has been pretty consistent over the years. So in this figure, which was produced by the Legislative Analyst's Office, this is another way we can think about disparities in service expenditures. So if you look at this graph here, another way to think about that graph is to think about what way to compare what regional centers spend on average on what we call a consumer. That's somebody that's served by a regional center. Here we can see that in 2021 to 22, that regional centers spent roughly 56 cents for every dollar, 56 cents on services for Hispanic or Latinx individual for every dollar they spent on services for an individual that they serve who is white. And we can see that that difference has only widened over the last 5 years or so, or 8 to 10 years or so, despite over $100 million of state funding to date in various equity initiatives that have been launched by the Department of Developmental Services. So it's certainly not for a lack of attention or a lack of trying or a lack of investment, but for various reasons, these spending disparities have proven to be very deeply entrenched and difficult to move the needle on. So what are some of the initiatives that have been tried in our space to crack this nut and get at these racial disparities in spending? These boxes are just a brief summary of the key initiatives that have been launched and implemented in our system. You'll see some things like implicit bias training, pay differentials for staff who are multilingual, lower caseloads at some regional centers for service coordinators who are serving families who speak languages other than English and who typically have children or individuals that have gotten very few or even no services from the regional center. But I think the primary or signature initiatives from the Department for Developmental Services over the last 10 years or so have been investments in what they call service access and equity grants, as well as other regional center-driven projects with regard to language access and cultural competency. And as we'll see, those projects by and large have focused on a particular type of intervention or policy lever. And for the most part, there's certainly been variation and diversity in approaches that have been taken, for sure. But the majority, I think a significant majority of projects in this space have focused on helping people better understand and therefore better navigate the existing regional center system. And in this slide, we see just a sampling. I'm sorry about the tiny font, but this is just to illustrate the types of service navigation and language accessibility specialist projects that different regional centers have created, which we very much appreciate. I think everyone here understands and completely agrees with how essential those types of positions, sometimes they're called promotoras, they could be community health workers, they're so essential, but have they been enough? Have they really accomplished the purpose or the intent of helping people to better navigate the system and therefore access the services they need? Unfortunately, we have not really seen those projects really move the needle. in a significant way, despite a lot of good intent and effort. Here you can see a chart that shows how racial disparities in spending have only widened in the regional center system. And you can see from the chart that while per capita expenditures have risen for everyone in the last 5 years, they have increased much more for those who are white. While the average amount of spending on services has remained relatively flat, particularly for individuals who are Hispanic or Latinx, as well as for people identified as other. So then the question becomes, why? Why have these spending disparities been so so entrenched and so immovable? A few of the things we talked about in our 2023 report are basically summarized here. And one of them, the box on the right, is very similar. Some of those recommendations are very similar to what our wonderful colleague Madonna just shared in her session, which has to do with full partnership with those most affected at every level. That means really listening and engaging people with lived experience, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities served by regional centers, putting them at the center and involving them in identifying problems and co-designing potential solutions to those problems from the very beginning. She already covered that far better than I could have. But what I want to talk more about today is shifting our focus from just helping people navigate the system as it exists to transforming that system. So another way I like to think about this is to think about the metaphor of a jungle. If we think about our system as a jungle, and unfortunately there are many people, especially people of color and families from underserved communities who tell us when they call us at DRC how they experience the various barriers and all the different hoops they feel like they have to jump through to be able to understand the system and then get what they need in a timely way. If we think of our system as a jungle that is dense, thick, tangled, full of trees, very hard for anyone to figure out how to make it through, there are two different ways we could approach that problem. We could continue to provide more maps, come up with better signage to help people find their way through that jungle, provide some guides to help people navigate through the jungle. Even as that jungle continues to grow in size and complexity and density, but we would say a more efficient way of addressing that problem would be to just build a road through the jungle. Cut through the density and the complexity. And instead of focusing so much on helping individuals find their own individual way through the system, find a way to make the system easier to go right through by building a paved path and just making it easier for everyone at a systems level. So in our brief, and you can see a link to it down there, and you will hopefully get these materials later. This is just a summary of what we mean when we talk about going from navigation to transformation. It's about moving from a lens that feels to too many families of color, they will often tell us that it feels like the system is implicitly blaming them, even if that's no one's intent. How it can sometimes or often come across is, it's not us, it's you. If you just understood the way the system works better, then it wouldn't be as hard and you would have a much better time accessing services. That can feel really isolating and depressing and overwhelming. In our brief, we talk about different ways that the system can do more to own and acknowledge how its own structures may contribute to the problem. Acknowledging how often people of color, unfortunately, have serious issues and difficulty trusting in government systems, and being very hesitant, and sometimes resistant or scared to share data broadly for various reasons. We talk about the need for people to feel safe to share and to build trust in the system. Again, moving from expecting disabled people and their families who already have so much to take care of, moving from expecting them to navigate across system silos on their own, and moving to shifting that burden, the burden of coordinating needs across departments, off of individuals and onto, again, the system, onto government, structures that do that across the board for everyone. In this past year or so since we published our brief originally, we have started to do even more work in this area to really dig into what else could account for differences in expenditures by race and ethnicity. So one possible place to start, and something we've started examining more closely, are differences in how expenditures are approved at the regional center level. And here I have included some sample language. It says service standards. And this reflects something that not everyone may be as keyed into, which is that regional centers under the Lanterman Act have the ability to set their own service standards, or what we call purchase of service policies. And as it says here, each regional center develops its own service standard policy that's unique to the community that it serves. And those standards get reviewed and approved by DDS. So how does this play out? If you look at the right side of this slide, you'll see a graph. And if you look at sort of the center graph that says PA, that refers to a service known as personal assistance. And what this bar graph represents is it tells us some expenditure data about the average amount that is spent on personal assistance for children, people between the ages of 0 to 17 years old who live at home with their families. And you'll see that in 2022-23, expenditures per capita were somewhere between $15,000 to $20,000, depending on your race or ethnic background. However, on the left-hand side, you will see the service policy on personal assistance for Harbor Regional Center, which is located in the South Bay area. And you'll notice that they have a description of what personal assistance does, and the way that it, the kind of care and the kind of things that are included in personal assistance. But you'll also notice that it says for children, the need for personal assistance is seen as a typical parental responsibility, and only under exceptional circumstances would this regional center authorize personal assistance for a child. So for us, this raised some questions. Do children at this regional center have meaningful access to personal assistance services compared to children at other regional centers? And if they don't have the same kind of access or access that's meaningful compared to children who just happen to live elsewhere in the state, what communities does this affect most and how? And these are the questions that we have started asking ourselves and asking others in the system more broadly. And this is just one example, but does it make sense for personal assistance to be considered a parent's obligation in one area of the state, but a regional center's obligation in another? Why do regional centers get to decide when an entire service type for a child is a parent's responsibility as opposed to a regional center responsibility? And if the point of local control is to be more responsive to the needs of the local community and tailor policies and practices to what that community needs, how well are those needs being reflected in purchase of service policies that determine which services and how services are approved and funded at the individual level? So now in 2024, we have started to do some more thinking and work about what service expenditure levels really tell us, because we've been thinking a lot more about racial and ethnic disparities and equity and what that really means. You'll recall this figure from earlier in the presentation, which again, so much of the focus and the discourse in our system over the last decade or so has been on disparities in spending, right? That's what we've been talking about. But what does this data tell us about how well people's needs are actually being met? Are service expenditure levels even what we should be looking at when we think about whether or not there's racial equity in our system? Does more spending necessarily equate to better results or outcomes for people? Or does it tell us more about the volume of services provided and the cost of those services? Why have per capita expenditure levels been our system's benchmark for so many years for measuring equity? I personally would say, because honestly, it is the best, most comprehensive data point we currently have in the regional center system, unfortunately. We don't have and have not had the quality and degree of data that we think we really need to be able to tell whether or not there's true equity in our system. And by equity, we mean, is everybody getting what they need to actually and meaningfully address what they want and need for their lives? People with IDD deserve to have three things: the supports and services that they need to meet their own individual needs and live lives of their own design and achieve the outcomes that they identify for themselves. And they should get those supports and services when they need them. And for a very long time, we have not had really any good data on what supports and services people actually need, how effective those supports and services are at addressing those needs, and the degree to which people are getting those supports in a timely manner. And I'll talk about these three things. How does our system currently assess individuals' areas of functional need and or their need for very specific types of services? right now and for many years, we have not had any consistent or comprehensive assessment tools for this purpose. There are some homegrown tools or rubrics or checklists or criteria that are used here and there by different regional centers, but none of them are comprehensive or take a comprehensive look at identifying all of a person's potential needs. There's certainly nothing that's consistently used across the state or across regional centers. And most importantly, there's no assessment tool that has been validated to do any of those things. So I think that's one reason why we actually don't have very high quality data about what people actually need. We also don't have really good data about the quality of services and the degree to which particular services effectively help people achieve the outcomes they want for their lives. And that has to do with the fact that just nationally and broadly speaking, there are few good outcome measures for home and community-based services, especially for people with IDD and especially at the individual level. There are some state or system level measures that are out there and have been out there and that are used, but not very much for outcomes at the individual level. And finally, how does our system currently track timeliness of access to services? Are people getting the things that they need when they need them? Well, currently, we do not have very good data on that either, because even though we have a lot of data on what we call service authorization, in our system, services are not considered authorized. They're not entered into our systems as being authorized until after both a service is approved for someone and an available provider is located. That means that we don't have good data points. If you think about two points in time, the only data point that we have that's entered is service authorization, which happens both after identification of the need for it and we have an available provider in hand. We don't have this data point here, which is when did that service approval happen? So we don't have good data about the lag in time that may exist between the day that a service was determined to be necessary and the day that the service was technically authorized, which occurs only when we've been able to locate an available provider for that service. If we don't have data about that gap, how big those gaps are, who has gaps in timeliness, we're also just not really able to tell at a high level how well we are meeting this particular measure on timeliness. So this brings us to 2024. Some of you may have heard about this, but in case you had not heard, in January of 2024, as part of Governor Newsom's budget proposal for the next fiscal year, CalHHS announced the launch of a master plan for developmental services. And many of you know that our state has had different master plans, the master plan for aging, and many other cross-sector initiatives that really focus the entire state on the needs of a particular population across sectors. And at DRC, we think that this could be an incredible opportunity and a rare opportunity to finally start drilling down into some of the questions and data gaps that I've just been talking about. Because we would suggest that the true measure of equity would be to have a good sense of the degree to which those things are met. Are people getting what they need when they need it? And then disaggregating that data by race and ethnicity. There should not be a humongous gap by race in that data. And if there is, that's what we think would be a far better measure of racial equity in our system or inequity in our system than just looking at service expenditures alone. This master plan for developmental services, if you want to learn more about it, you can go to the CalHH website about it. It is set to launch with its first meeting sometime later this month. A working group, a stakeholder working group has been appointed. And what we know is that it will go for about a year. We've been told that some master plan recommendations will come out with stakeholder input sometime in March of 2025, so a year from now. We really hope that this can be an effective vehicle for identifying some of these issues. Oh, I'm sorry, it's half an hour. These are the types of things that we hope can be addressed as part of that master plan discussion. We see these as some of the potential barriers or actual barriers that people have in accessing the supports that they need. And thank you for your time and your patience. In the breakout session, my colleagues Will and Sabrina and I are looking forward to continuing this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Vivian. We do have some questions for you. There has been discussion in the Q&A about the challenges that families have because their case managers lack knowledge and training, and so their case managers don't know what to offer them or what's available. Is there anything about standardizing the training for regional center case managers or the tools that are available to them and a resource map that's available to them regionally?
That is such a good question and proposal. Some of you may know or have heard that there have been proposals and actually now requirements, new requirements and statute as of last year. For DDS and regional centers to start standardizing more and more. So to have a standardized intake process, for example, to have a standardized IPP template. But this particular thing that you've asked about, Clarissa, that is not one of the things that has been required of regional centers statewide yet. And I completely agree that is a huge gap. And something that is sorely lacking and sorely needed, because that is as the gatekeeper, if your gatekeeper who helps direct you and connect you to services is not fully informed or in some cases misinformed, then quality counseling about your options and about how your needs can be met is not happening. And yes, that is something that has come to our attention as well, and something that we have started to have more conversations about and bring to the attention of the legislature and hopefully the administration through the master plan process. It's an excellent point.
Other questions are about pay for service providers. There's going to be turnover and it's going to be difficult to access services if there isn't enough pay for the service providers.
Yes, it is a tremendous concern that we have at DRC too, and many folks do. If you are not familiar, one of the other things that was that the governor proposed in his January budget was a delay in what was to have been the third and final phase of a phased in set of rate increases for providers. That was supposed to have kicked in July of this year. Now the proposal is to delay that until July of 2025. that has caused a lot of dismay and concern in our system. Those rates, quite honestly, I think many of us feel that they're not enough as it is. There's wide variation, or has been wide variation, in pay rates around the state, even within the same type of provider. So it's a major concern, and that's something that I think the legislature and advocates and the administration have been very focused on this spring. I wish I had an answer for you. I don't, other than to note that it's a hot topic, and for those of you who may be interested in engaging on it, it's if you look around, it's, I think, easy to find ways to engage or to learn more about it.
One thought that I had. So California has a system, you know, taking three steps back about how do we get the system that's so intractable. Our system is based on individual needs and based on a negotiation with authority figures, basically, and certain people and cultures and what are more comfortable with that than others. And some people have, you know, information is power. Some people have access to more information. I know that the Latinx community, 30% don't have internet access, for example. It's pretty hard to have information if you don't have access to the internet, and to go into those meetings with equal standing. And I'm wondering whether some of these, I'm just from my own experience, noticing that people of color are not getting what I know they deserve, and trying to help them advocate through the system. You know, when some of the things that I've noticed is that some of these attempts to improve things, maybe making them worse. For example, I'm working with somebody who is a monolingual Chinese person who has a monolingual Chinese caseworker, and he doesn't want to shame his caseworker, and his shame, and you know, the same. He's not comfortable arguing with authority figures, and neither is his caseworker. So by having somebody who speaks the same language and comes from the same culture, I'm like, you know, the white people would have fired that caseworker, you know, or would have or would have gone to his boss, or, you know, but you don't want to do that for understandable reasons. But, you know, it's actually exacerbating the issue instead of making it better.
Arisa, that is, I mean, what you just said strikes very close to home for me, as the child of immigrants, and the sister of someone who has autism, has been served by the regional center for most of his life. That is very familiar, unfortunately, and it affects so many people, these kinds of like cultural issues. And of course, the regional center, I'm sure, I mean, it was well-intended, and I'm sure that it's been good in various ways to match that individual with a service coordinator who comes from or shares the same background. But you're right, sometimes that can compound certain barriers or problems. I'll address that in one way. It absolutely needs attention. I was very interested to hear about what states like North Carolina have done in this space. In North Carolina, my understanding is that to address this problem, they have started to do things like, and I'm not sure how to describe this, but I guess it would be called outreach or education to aim specifically at supporting particular communities, to letting them know what's possible, addressing the fact that many communities do feel like they want to do things on their own. They have to do everything themselves. They keep it all in the family, and you just don't ask others who aren't related to you, especially the government, to do stuff for you, like take care of people in your own home. That's just what you do, right? That's what I'm expected to do for my parents as the eldest daughter in a Taiwanese American family. The problem, of course, is that writ large, that can lead to tremendous caregiver burnout, where people, especially women of color, end up giving and giving and giving and doing everything themselves until one day they collapse or get sick or pass away, and nothing has been put in place for the adult child. And that creates its own set of problems. They recognize that at the state level, their state Medicaid agency, and have started to do outreach designed to try to counteract or better balance that. I think that's a very promising model. The other thing I would say is that generally, one of the most common barriers we hear about at DRC is people saying, we don't even know what's out there or what's available. And when we talk to our service coordinators, they're not that helpful. They give us a list or they mention some things, but we still don't really understand. It's not sufficient. I think there's a lot that California needs to learn about how to do outreach and education in a more meaningful way that goes beyond just handing people a list or having a service coordinator rattle off some suggestions in 10 minutes in a meeting, but concerted, I think, peer-based outreach by partnering with community-based organizations, starting very early over time.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.